seriously popular.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
In January 2023, Constance Martin and her boyfriend Mark Gordon disappeared and went on the run with their newborn baby, Victoria.
A nationwide search resulted in the sad discovery of Victoria's body, and the pair have now been charged with killing her, which they both deny.
I'm Jack Hardy, a news reporter for the Daily Mail. I'll be in court every day, reporting the events as they happen.
And I'm broadcaster and journalist Caroline Cheetham. Together, we'll take you behind the headlines, bringing you the evidence, witness statements and testimony from the Old Bailey in London.
This is The Trial, Constance Martin and Mark Gordon.
So welcome back to this special bank holiday episode of the podcast. It's been a significant few days in court since Constance Martin finished giving her evidence earlier this week. So we wanted to bring you up to date today with everything that we've heard at the Old Bailey.
Yes, and that's because the jury have heard from a key defence witness for Constance Martin. He's called Professor Peter Fleming, and he told jurors he probably has more experience investigating the circumstances of a baby's death than anyone else in the UK. Today, we'll be bringing you his evidence and his claim that it was exceedingly unlikely Victoria died from hypothermia.
He also told the court there was no evidence co-sleeping carries any risk to babies. And he said it's used almost universally outside of the West.
Now, in some fiery exchanges with the prosecution, he agreed that he had produced a report about how Victoria died based almost entirely on what Constance Martin had told him.
And in relation to the criminal charges that she faces, he said he'd found no evidence that she was responsible for her daughter's death.
Welcome to episode 17, No Evidence of Hypothermia.
Yeah, so Jack, we're here today on Good Friday because we wanted to keep you all up to date with the trial. Now, we know Constance Martin finished giving her evidence a few days ago after first entering the witness box on March the 7th. And we know the trial is now entering its final stages. So what's happened in the last couple of days is Constance Martin's defence team have called an expert witness. And that's this man called Professor Peter Fleming. So, Jack, what do we know about him?
So, Professor Fleming is a clinical neonatologist and he's spent decades researching babies and sleep. In 2001, he was awarded a CBE for services to the understanding of cot death, which he said was one of his major research interests over the past 40 years. He's also the co-author of advice for parents issued by major health bodies, including the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, which is known as NICE.
Also, Jack, importantly for this trial and the reason he's been called, he's contributed to drafting official health advice on co-sleeping.
Yes, a key part of his work, we were told, is investigating the circumstances of a baby's death. An area he told the court he has more experience researching than anyone else in the UK.
Right, so we were told that Professor Fleming had produced 6 reports on this case, analysing various aspects of the death of baby Victoria. And the initial questions from Francis Fitzgibbon KC, who represents Constance Martin, were around the age of Victoria when she died. And Jack, this is important because the prosecution say Victoria died later than the defendants claim.
Yes, we know Constance Martin claims Victoria died on the first night the couple spent in the tent on the South Downs, which she says was on January the 9th. She's told the court she fell asleep sitting up with Victoria inside her jacket, and when she woke up, Victoria was not alive. But the prosecution say Victoria died much later, most likely from hypothermia, because the couple kept her with them for weeks on the run, in the cold, living in a tent and being carried around in a bag for life.
So Francis Fitzgibbon, Casey, wanted to ask Professor Fleming about the evidence we've already heard from a previous expert called Dr. Andreas Manarides. Now, he had said Victoria was likely to have been 2 or 4 or 6 weeks old when she died. But Professor Fleming said the baby was probably younger than this. He said there were few reliable measures for the age of a baby, as many of these things can change after death, but the most reliable indicator was the length of a baby's foot. Now, their exchange has been voiced by actors.
Based on the measurement of the length of Victoria's feet, was that then how you reached your opinion about the age of the baby?
The length of the feet would be consistent with a baby born at term. It fits very closely with a baby who was born at term and died at 2 to 3 weeks or more.
Dr. Manarides says the measurements show a window between 2 to 6 weeks. Where do you put the age in that window?
I would say 2 to 3 weeks. It's the most likely and the best fit.
So then they turn to the likely date of Victoria's death. Now, one of the areas discussed by the previous medical experts was a blood vessel, which was still open in the body of the baby. And Jack, there's a technical name for this.
Yeah, so we were told the technical term for this blood vessel still being open is patent ductus arteriosus. And in the report from Dr. Manarides, he said for the majority of infants, this would close around 2 to 3 weeks after birth. That's because the blood vessel is used to oxygenate blood when the baby is still in the mother's womb and not able to breathe oxygen for itself. But Professor Fleming said the process of this blood vessel closing would happen between 24 hours to 3 days from birth in 99% of babies.
Dr. Manarides is of the view that, looking at the ductus arteriosus and other measures, it is consistent with the baby being 4 to 6 to 8 weeks old. What is your opinion?
Consideration of it is rather a vague task. The measurements suggest to me that she was 2 weeks old, or a little bit more. The probability of her being 2 weeks old is much higher than the probability of her being older at the point of death. My feeling is that the likely and the best fit is that this baby was 2 weeks of age.
So Mr. Fitzgibbon moved his questioning to the issue of hypothermia, and as we said at the top of the episode, this is important because it's how the prosecution claimed Victoria died, as opposed to Constance Martin's account that she fell asleep breastfeeding, and when she woke up, Victoria was dead.
I've seen no evidence of hypothermia as a cause of death. I can't say it couldn't possibly have happened, but the description of how the baby was being cared for, and I only have the parents' description of that, but that would make hypothermia exceedingly unlikely.
Now, Professor Fleming said it was highly unlikely that a baby who was suffering from cold stress would still be feeding properly. And of course, we know Constance Martin said Victoria was feeding well.
On the hypothesis that a mother is sufficiently warm while feeding a baby, what does that tell you about the cold stress of a baby?
It is not there.
As far as you are concerned, could you see from the evidence available, do you see that there are any clear indications that the baby did die as a result of the baby being too cold?
I can say that a baby that is exposed to cold stress will succumb and die very quickly. In hours or days, not several weeks.
Then they turn to a topic which is central to the analysis of Professor Fleming, and which the defence have mentioned previously. That's this idea of a microenvironment.
Can you tell us what you mean by microenvironment in your report?
The microenvironment is the environment immediately around the person. For a sleeping adult, it's the immediate area of the body. For example, the temperature between the clothing and bedding is a microenvironment. It needs to be at least 20 degrees Celsius. For a baby who is between the outer layer and inner layer of the mother's clothing, that is the environment they are sleeping in.
Can you tell us about your research?
We studied Mongolia in winter, and half the population lives in Mongolian tents, and the room temperature in that environment is 0 or below 0. And babies were always, without exception, sharing a bed with parents inside an outer layer of bedding. We found that their microenvironment temperature was near the adult's body temperature. They were very warm.
This was a topic that was raised by Dr. Atreja. And his view was that when mother and baby are both cold and the baby is inside the mother's clothing, that doesn't provide a satisfactory microenvironment to sustain their temperature.
That's nonsense.
We have heard about skin-to-skin contact being important.
I'm not talking about skin-to-skin. If a baby has become cold, the best and quickest way to warm the baby up is skin-to-skin. Physically, that is how the baby and mother are designed to work. With thin layers of clothing in between, it takes longer to warm up. However, there is no evidence that if the baby is already in that position, they are going to get cold. With a clothed baby and a clothed adult, the heat transfer slows, but it doesn't stop. The temperature underneath the outer layer eventually warms up. For a baby to be able to feed, you can be confident it is not cold stressed.
A wrapped baby being within the clothes of her mother, would that provide a safe microenvironment or not?
Yes, that was the norm in Northern Europe until reasonably recently.
The judge then broke in to ask a question from the jury about whether this microenvironment would be affected if the body temperature of the parents was low.
The only time in which that becomes important is if the adult is suffering from hypothermia. When an adult is in a normal position, the blood flow is sufficient. In conditions of hypothermia, going to sleep is effectively a death sentence. In any other condition, the mother's body temperature wouldn't change.
So then they turn to this issue of co-sleeping, where a parent and a baby share the same sleeping space. This is how Constance Martin believes the baby died, and the prosecution have told the jury that she was warned on more than one occasion by social workers that sleeping with her baby could be dangerous. But Professor Fleming said he disagreed with that.
NICE, that's the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, has published that there is no evidence that co-sleeping in itself carries any risk to a baby. Co-sleeping is not discouraged in this country. It is a normal practice and has never been discouraged by policy. More than 90% of babies on the planet sleep in that way. It is more that it can be dangerous in certain situations. That's not my opinion, that's the opinion of the Lullaby Trust, UNICEF and NICE. It is almost universal in non-Western countries.
Would sleeping in a sleeping bag make co-sleeping dangerous?
I'm not aware of any good evidence to suggest that.
So John Femiola KC, who represents Mark Gordon, was then given the opportunity to cross-examine Professor Fleming. He highlighted some of the risk factors that can make co-sleeping dangerous or reckless, such as smoking or drinking. Their exchange is voiced by actors.
Professor, am I right in thinking that it's crucial to take into account the mother's explanation as to the baby's actions and behaviour in cases like the one you're considering?
I would never dream of trying to interpret what happened to a baby in these circumstances without speaking at length to the parents.
Did you speak to Constance Martin?
Yes, I did.
Did she say they'd been smoking or taking tobacco products?
The answer is no.
What about alcohol?
That question was asked and the answer was no.
Did she give you an account of the circumstances of Victoria's death?
She did.
In considering the account she gave you, did you consider if there was any evidence to suggest significant cold stress in this case?
No. As I said, a baby that is feeding well is not cold stressed. It's not feasible.
You have reviewed this case, and in your opinion, did you find any evidence of inappropriate care by the parents?
The problem is defining inappropriate.
In your research and experience, have you come across situations where as a result of breastfeeding, falling asleep can occur?
Yes, in my report I mention it. I can recall at least two instances of sudden unexplained deaths of babies when a breastfeeding mother had fallen asleep over the baby that died. As a father of four sons, I'm aware that breastfeeding is an exhausting process. Talking to breastfeeding mothers in the first few weeks, if they get any sleep, it is short and intermittent.
We're going to take a quick break there, and when we come back, we'll bring you the exchanges between Professor Fleming and the prosecution. And it's fair to say they become much more heated, with accusations of lying being thrown about the court.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
So, Jack, Tom Little KC began his cross-examination of Professor Fleming, and it's fair to say it was pretty tetchy from the start.
Yes, it was, Caroline. Mr. Little was keen to unpick the professor's evidence, and his point really was that much of Professor Fleming's opinion was based on what he'd been told by Constance Martin, which he said was not reliable.
Can I start with something you said half an hour ago? In your opinion, hypothermia was an exceedingly unlikely cause of the baby's death.
That's correct.
That's not the way you have articulated your opinions across six reports.
I made very clear that the circumstances of her death were such that I felt that hypothermia would be exceedingly unlikely. I think there is no evidence that Victoria died as a result of cold stress.
The question I asked you was that you had articulated your opinion differently across your reports. Do you agree?
No, I don't. Find me an example of me saying something differently.
In the report from December 2023, you would find the word exceedingly unlikely. Do you want me to help you with how you have expressed it differently?
In the original report, the statement is, it is highly unlikely that she was suffering significant cold stress.
It is not the same as exceedingly unlikely, would you agree?
No.
There is no distinction in your mind between highly unlikely and exceedingly unlikely?
It's hair-splitting. I may have used slightly different phrasing, but the meaning is the same.
The reason that is your opinion is because it is based almost exclusively on Constance Martin as the source of your information. If she had lied to you about the number of layers of clothing the baby had in the tent, it might have changed your opinion, mightn't it?
I made clear always that I relied on the information of the only person there.
If she lied to you about the circumstances of the way in which the baby was positioned when she died, that would be relevant, wouldn't it?
Unless I have evidence that she is lying, my assumption would have to be that she is being truthful. The death of a baby being something that is burnt into the parent's mind. My impression is that her description of the event has been extraordinarily consistent throughout all the accounts I've seen.
The first time, 2.5 hours into interviews, she says that the baby was quite warm.
Unless you can show me a time she has said something different, it is quite difficult.
Has it crossed your mind that she might be responsible for the death of the baby?
Of course it has, but I see no evidence to support that.
Has it ever crossed your mind? You appear to be being partial in your view about her account.
I've seen no more evidence to believe that she has lied than you have lied.
Sorry, that I have lied. Do you think that's an appropriate comment for a witness in this court? You have taken everything she said at face value.
I haven't identified a single discrepancy anywhere.
You weren't present for all of her evidence. You have heard a small amount of time she was cross-examined. You have heard nothing from her examination in chief.
I haven't.
At no stage when she gave evidence over all those days did she mention anything about hands and feet being warm. She only said that to you. If that is right, do you want to review your assessment of her consistency?
My recollection is that in the police interview, she said that the baby was quite warm. I asked her explicitly if the hands and feet were warm.
Did you explore how she would be aware that the baby was warm? You see, contrary to a criminal trial, you don't test or challenge in any way the account given to you.
I'm talking to a bereaved mother about her baby's death.
I want the jury to understand what you do and don't do. You don't challenge the account given to you?
It would be inappropriate to do so.
You have largely relied on questions in the interview and only asked questions to clarify.
I was clarifying and seeking to find internal inconsistencies.
It is not part of your role to decide whether she is telling the truth or not.
My role is to understand how and why a baby has died, something I have more experience of than anyone in this country.
If she has lied about those matters, that would have an impact on your opinion, would you agree?
A description of a mother falling asleep over the baby is something I have seen before. I cannot say if the story was totally truthful.
If the baby wasn't feeding well in the hours before its death, that would be a relevant matter that would undermine your opinion. Would you agree?
Yes. I can only rely on the information given to me.
You haven't taken into account that she has lied to healthcare professionals in the past. For example, in 2017?
Because it is not relevant, I have not taken it into account. My understanding is that when one is trying to interpret information given by anyone, that unless you have evidence to contradict it, you have to assume that they are telling the truth.
Can you go to your first report, just so the jury are clear? You have produced 6 reports, 4 of them during the course of this trial.
I was asked to make specific reports on matters that arose during the course of the trial.
Before leaving London, they purchased a tent and multiple items of warm clothing for Victoria. Where did you get that information, that they purchased multiple items of warm clothing for Victoria?
That's partly from the police interview and partly from my interview.
Were you aware that there were no items of warm clothing bought before they left?
I wasn't aware of that.
Turning to the date of death, was it on January the 9th or January the 10th that she died?
From the information given at different points, it could be either.
Were you present when Constance Martin described how the baby had slept on her that night, on her chest, face down, underneath a coat? Is that something you would recommend?
It's not something that I would do. I have no evidence to suggest that it's not something that should be done.
Would that not risk restricting the baby's breathing?
There is no evidence available to suggest it does or does not. The presence of a baby in the prone-to-prone position, it is used by many, many mothers. I cannot answer that, and I don't think anyone can give you an answer to that.
A zipped-up coat? You think that's safe?
I have no evidence to suggest it's not. I would say it's not desirable, but I've got no evidence to say it's unsafe.
So Mr. Little then asked if Professor Fleming was familiar with the TICS rules for safe baby wearing. And Professor Fleming said he'd helped to draft those rules. It stands for tight. The sling should be tight enough to hug the baby close to you. In view at all times. You should be able to see the baby's face by glancing down. Close enough to kiss. Keep chin off chest and supported back. TICKS.
Are you aware of occasions when Constance Martin was on CCTV footage? She was carrying her baby underneath her jacket using a sling?
What I can say is that a great majority of the mothers using slings aren't aware of the guidance. It is not a unique characteristic of this mother.
That wasn't my question. My question was, you haven't seen the CCTV footage, have you?
I haven't seen the footage.
I want to ask you about safe sleeping, please. Can we hand out some copies of this guidance from the Lullaby Trust, please?
Which version is it?
It's the most up-to-date version.
I approved a new version last week.
Well, it's probably not as recent as that if it hasn't been published. Now, Professor Fleming, can you look at page 2? Always place your baby on their back for sleep. Does that remain the position?
Yes.
So when Constance Martin fell asleep in the tent, the baby was also asleep on its front, not its back?
Yes.
Give your baby a clear, flat, separate sleep space in the same room as you.
Whatever space you choose.
Make sure your baby's head is kept uncovered. In general terms, do you agree with this? A baby sleeping in a two-person tent requires some thought as to how to seek to ensure the baby is kept as safely as possible?
That is true wherever the baby sleeps.
Do you agree that in those circumstances, real care has to be exercised? Particularly if the mother is shattered because she has given birth, to ensure there is no risk of suffocating the baby or any other kind of death. That is the case?
Parents are always advised to look after the baby.
If Constance Martin had phoned you up after she departed into the wilderness of New Haven and said, I'm going to go to sleep in a tent, I have got a baby also in the tent, and it's between 4 and 10 degrees, what would your advice be?
I'm not going to answer it. It's a hypothetical question.
I'm asking you to answer it. Are you refusing to answer the question?
It would be inadvisable, but if you have to, than it would be to keep the baby inside your coat, which would be warm.
The risk of significant injury to the baby and even death is obvious, isn't it, in that scenario?
In that scenario, if the baby is inside the coat, it is likely to be safe inside that environment.
What investigation have you done on Constance Martin's coat?
I didn't have access to my usual laboratory for testing coats. What I can say is there was a study in France. What I did was collect data from the French laboratory. They've been doing something with puffer jackets recently.
I don't want to hear about some French study. I asked you what investigation you yourself have done of Constance Martin's coat.
I haven't been able to measure this particular jacket. What I did was look at data that exists about similar jackets.
Have you examined the sleeping bags?
I have not looked at, specifically, the sleeping bags.
But Professor Fleming said the material of the tent and the sleeping bags themselves were not as important as the microclimate the parents could create for the babies within their jacket.
So that was as far as we got with Professor Fleming, but he'll be back to continue giving his evidence after the Easter break. So Jack, that means the court's got a few days off now, but they're back on April the 8th.
Yep, that's right. So once we're back, we know Professor Fleming will complete his evidence. Then shortly after that, we're expecting the closing speeches to start from the prosecution and from the defence.
OK, so Constance Martin and Mark Gordon deny manslaughter by gross negligence. They also deny perverting the course of justice, concealing the birth of a child, child cruelty, and causing or allowing the death of a child.
You can follow us on X at The Trial Podcast and contact us on thetrial@mailmetromedia.co.uk.
You can leave a comment on Spotify or even send us a voice note on WhatsApp on 07796 657 512. Start your message with the word trial.
See you then.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.